The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, new week and a lot to talk about.
Wow, absolutely.
Of course, the drama of the shuttle diplomacy over the weekend definitely occupying the headlines. But I see this morning another report coming out of Syria that apparently there are claims, at least by Syrian state media, that Israel has carried out attacks near to Damascus, apparently targeted sites just not too far from Damascus. Reports that two people were actually killed in these attacks this morning, which were carried out about 2.5 to 3 hours ago, according to the reports that I've just seen. It's interesting how the Syrian state media like to say that the air defense systems were activated, that they managed to intercept most of the missiles in order to deal with Israeli aggression. However, two people were killed and there was damage caused and there were explosions heard. So even though we know that there is quite sophisticated anti-aircraft systems that are deployed in Syria and that are being used against Israeli attacks, it seems as though Israel is able somehow to circumvent these systems and succeed in carrying out these attacks. We're not exactly sure what the background is, but my guess is that it's the same old story, which is movement of Iranian arms into the area and Israel somehow trying to slow down those movements to try and intercept the movement of these arms and ammunition into the area in southern Syria. And of course, this news comes just hours after the IDF yesterday spoke about the fact that they'd actually intercepted two Iranian drones that were en route to the Gaza Strip from Iran last year. Mm. That's a fascinating story as well about how they managed to intercept these drones before they actually reached Israeli airspace. Unfortunately, we don't have a great deal of time to talk about that, but obviously it is a new old story in the sense that it's something that happened some time ago, but has just been released now and obviously has generated quite a lot of interest.
Absolutely. Let's just talk about what went on over the weekend. It was incredible to turn a phone on after Shabbat here in South Africa and to see that Naftali Bennett had in fact flown on Shabbat to meet with Putin. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so a very, very fascinating story indeed, because as we know, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett not only respects the tradition that Israel has of its prime ministers when on official business observing Shabbat and observing laws of Kashrut, but we know that Naftali Bennett not only does it from a traditional perspective, but also because that is who he is. He is a Shabbat observant, and he has made clear that that's the way he would like to run his term as prime minister. And yet we understood on Saturday that he took off in the morning, on Shabbat morning, in a private jet en route to Moscow. And he took with him his trusted interpreter, Zev Elkin, who has acted as interpreter to the Russian authorities, to the Russian government, for Israeli prime ministers, including former prime minister Netanyahu already for some time. Zev Elkin himself, also Shabbat observant in his private life, and yet the two of them were on the jet on the way to Moscow Shabbat morning. So one has to imagine that this was a case of pikuach nefesh, because that's the only thing that can really afford the excuse to break Shabbat, to transgress the rules of Shabbat. And I understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett must have decided that this was a case of saving lives, this mission that he went on to Moscow to meet with President Putin. He was the first leader to meet with the Russian president since the outbreak of hostilities in Ukraine. And we understand that the meeting took place under the with the coordination of U.S. authorities. We understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett had also spoken to German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who apparently was even in Israel last week. We didn't even have a chance to discuss the fact that the new German Chancellor had made an official visit to Israel during the course of last week, met with Israeli officials. The trip to Moscow was coordinated with Chancellor Olaf Scholz, was also apparently coordinated with French President Macron, And we understand that the Turkish authorities, and particularly the Turkish president Erdogan, was also coordinated in these plans, because the Israeli jet had to transfer over Turkish airspace in order to get to Moscow. And then once arriving in Moscow, we understand that the prime minister and Ze'ev Elkin met with President Putin for up to 3 hours at the Kremlin to discuss issues relating to the war in Ukraine. The prime minister, when briefing the cabinet meeting yesterday, said that Israel didn't come with a plan. The idea was simply to transfer information, transfer messages from Ukraine, from President Zelensky to President Putin, backwards and forwards. And we understand that this meeting suddenly took place because, as we know, Israel has been there have been attempts to drag Israel into this mediation effort already for some time. We understand that even though the Ukrainian President Zelensky has been very enthusiastic and approached former Prime Minister Netanyahu as well as current Prime Minister Naftali Bennett to mediate, the Russian side were not willing to accept that mediation role until we understand late last week, which is what precipitated this sudden shuttle visit to Moscow, when the Russians suddenly accepted the possibility of Prime Minister Naftali Bennett acting as a mediator. And we understand that that's really what precipitated all the urgency surrounding the Shabbat trip to Moscow. We understand that Prime Minister had spoken to President Zelensky at least 3 times during the course of Saturday, both before and after his meetings with the President of Russia. And then immediately following the meetings at the Kremlin, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett boarded his plane and flew to Berlin to meet with Chancellor Olaf Scholz once again, who is one of the people we understand also coordinating some mediation effort. And he had dinner on Saturday evening in Berlin with Chancellor Olaf Scholz before returning back to Israel, I guess, overnight on Saturday. And he was full day at work yesterday. We'll talk about some of the things that he got up to yesterday, which really left a lump in my throat and was really very, very emotional. But in terms of the work that he's doing with the Russian government, and in particular with President Putin, there were so many fascinating little snippets that came out of that meeting. First of all, the comment that Naftali Bennett found President Putin to be fully in control of his faculties and really making sense. He found him to be rational. That was the word that Naftali Bennett used after his meeting with President Putin. He seems not to be interested in a ceasefire. He seems not to be interested in creating safe corridors for refugees to escape, but he is interested in hearing that Ukraine has effectively capitulated, has stopped fighting, has decided that the way to save lives and the way to stop this war is for Ukraine simply to lay down arms. That apparently is the current Russian take on the situation. Of course, the Israeli public have accepted this dramatic shuttle diplomacy, and in particular the fact that Naftali Bennett seems to be relatively close to President Putin, with some skepticism, lots and lots of criticism about why it is that the Prime Minister would want to be meeting with the enemy, why he would wish to be seen with Putin, why we would wish to have any reports that he has anything to do with the person who's being cast as such an evil rogue, a villain at this time, given that war that's happening in Ukraine and the activities that are going on there. So many people being highly critical of the situation. But one wonders, you know, one of the things that Naftali Bennett said was that he felt that there is an obligation that he has in order to try and stop this war. If he has a way to potentially bridge the gap between the Ukrainian leadership and the Russian leadership, and that could potentially bring an end to the war, then he's not going to leave that stone unturned, and he feels an obligation to enter into all of this. Behind the scenes, of course, is the Iranian deal, the fact that Russia again has included some new terminology, some new conditions into the deal with Iran. There is a fear on the Israeli side that Iranian deal may well be concluded as soon as this week, and that may well be behind the scenes. We can perhaps talk a little bit more about where that's all going. Unfortunately, today I'm not sure that we'll have the time, but certainly the Iranian deal is part of this constellation, the fact that Russia seems to be recruiting Syrians in order to take them to fight in Ukraine is another little development that I've read about, which is also very fascinating indeed. So many different angles to the story.
The criticism that he shouldn't be seen with Putin, or he shouldn't be drawing attention to Israel over this when the chance of success is not that great, surely that is, I think, unfair. His intentions certainly seem to be very noble.
On the face of it, his intentions seem to be noble, and on the face of it, it seems as if though that he has the best interest at heart. But we never really know what's going on behind the scenes, and there's so many different constellations, so many different factors that come into this. And of course, there were mixed messages even coming out of the U.S. Even though we understand that his visit to Moscow was coordinated with the U.S. administration, there were at least some people who criticized his visit to Moscow, saying that we shouldn't be engaging with Putin. Putin at the moment is villain number one, and that nobody should be engaging with him. It's almost like negotiating with terrorists in that sort of category of how terrible this particular dialogue is that Prime Minister Bennett has entered into with President Putin. And of course, you know, the photo opportunities don't necessarily serve Israel's purpose at this time, when Putin is really cast as international enemy number one. And it was noticeable, in fact, that there were no photographs that came out of the meeting on Shabbat. There were some people who suggested it was because Naftali Bennett, at least in some way, was trying to honor Shabbat and didn't want to have photo opportunities. There are other people who say that this is clearly because he just didn't want that to go down in posterity as another failure in the international mediation side, this time involving the Israeli Prime Minister. But who knows precisely what is going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. An incredible story is that 90 Jewish orphans were amongst hundreds of refugees who have now landed in Israel from Ukraine. Tell us about this.
I don't know how many people actually won't get emotional about this particular story. I certainly felt massive emotion when I saw the pictures of the Prime Minister having returned from shuttle diplomacy overnight on Saturday night, turning out yesterday at Ben Gurion Airport, waiting for the El Al flight from Romania to land with 90 Jewish orphans on board from Ukraine. Now, these are people, these are children aged between 2 and 12 who had had to walk through the snow, some of them being pushed in prams, some of them walking in temperatures which were below zero, in order to cross the border from Ukraine into Romania with the help of Chabad rabbis and Chabad staff, who apparently went to this orphanage in order to rescue these 90 children. It was Prime Minister Naftali Bennett who climbed the stairs of the plane and went on board to greet the children. And he is seen in the pictures to approach one young boy, and we can see the video with his wife Gilat next to him, approaches a young boy, and he says to him, "Hello, I'm Naftali. I'm the Prime Minister of Israel. Would you like to come with me to Israel?" He then picked up some of the children in his arms and he carried them down the steps of the plane. Now, you can't help but set that off against what went down 70, 80 years ago, when children like that had to rely upon the goodwill of the international community to find safe haven, because there was no Jewish state. There was no welcome at the airport. There was nobody waiting for them to pick them up in their arms and say, "Welcome home.
We'll keep you safe. We'll keep you safe.
Incredible. And we'll keep you safe. This is a place to be safe." And it's highly emotional for me to talk about it. And I think that it would be very difficult for me to imagine anybody else is not emotional. Fortunately, most of us, including present company, are not old enough to remember when Jews didn't have this wonderful facility. But we can't help but set off we can't help but compare the two situations. And there was a piece that was written that went viral that mentioned Natan Sharansky at a recent Sheva Brachot, where he spoke about his experiences. Let's not forget that Natan Sharansky himself is Ukrainian, was Ukrainian, grew up in the area of Donetsk, Ukrainian, and he said the following. He said that in those days, back in the 1970s, when he was living in that area, so we're talking about 50-odd years ago, he said that to be Ukrainian or to be Russian didn't really matter. It made no difference. Everybody was the same, except there was one difference. And the one difference was if you were a Jew. And if you were a Jew, then you were effectively the lowest rung of society. That was the main difference. You knew the moment that you were a Jew that you would be discriminated against and that you would be treated as the lowest of the lows in society. And he says how things have changed in 50 short years. He says because today when people turn up at the border of Ukraine looking for a way out and they say they are a Jew, they are rescued from the lines. The Israeli consulate is there to pick them up. The charities are there to give them preferential treatment, to put them on planes and to bring them to Israel. He says the world has completely moved upside down, whereas then being a Jew was a bad thing, was to be discriminated against, was to have the worst possible side of life. Today, all you have to say is you're a Jew and you're picked up and you're helped and you're given whatever you need. And that is certainly the case with thousands of Ukrainian refugees who are arriving in Israel, who have been given safe haven here in Israel, of course, not only safety, but security and a new life. And, you know, it'll be very fascinating to watch the development of those 90 orphans who arrived here yesterday, bewildered, not have no idea what was going on. They specially recruited Ukrainian-speaking airline crew to be on the LL flight to bring those children and the other Ukrainians home.
Unbelievable, Anthony Reich. Wow. Kim T saying, I'm in tears. Please, can you upload that video? We will get that video for you. I'd love your reaction. Please, 34519 or 0618951019. It's 801. Good morning.